Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam Canto 10, Chapter 5, The Meeting of Nanda Maharaj and Vasudev. Text number 14. Anyone recognize any words there? If you have the book, I'm sure you can recognize a lot. Without the book, yes. But, yes. Actually, it's sure is a little bit different from milk. Condensed milk. Anything else? What is the word for, what's that? Yes, what is that? Who is that? Cowherd men. Gopa. Yes. Yes. Anything else? What's that? Curd. Curd, yeah, actually, it's the same thing. And what does Greta mean? Grita means butter. And ambu? What's that? Yes, what verse is ambu in? With water? There's some word, I can't remember either. Ambu daksha. And what does Parash Param mean? Much chita, much kata prana. Bodhyantas parashparam katayantas tamam nityam tushanti charamanti cha. So what does parashparam mean? Thoughts, my pure devotees, they dwell in me. Yes. The lives are surrendered to me, and they derive great satisfaction and bliss, enlightening one another and conversing about me. So parashparam means one another. And rishta, what is rishta? Parishta. I think that we just went over that word. There was another one which had parishta. Rishta means to be joyful, being so pleased. And that's about all we know, except for Navanitai. Navanita or Navanitash. What is Krishna called? He's called Navyona. But is the butter thief? Yes. What's that? He's also called Makhandra, that's true. Navanita. So, we'll go with the verse. Gopa, Parashparam, Brishta, Dadi, Shira, Kritam Budi, Asinchanto, Vilim. Vilimpanto Navanitai Cha Chikshipu Gopa Parashparam Rishta Dadi Shira Gritambu Di Asin Chanto Vilimpanto Navanitaischa Chikshipu Gopa Parashparam Rishta Dadi Shira Gritam Bubi Asin Chanto Vilimpanto Navanitaischa Chikshipu Shipu.
Shipu.
Gopa, the cowherd men, Parashparam, on one another. Rishta, being so pleased. Dadi, with curd. Shira, with condensed milk. Krita Ambuvi, with water mixed with butter. Asinchanta, sparkling. Vilimpanta, smearing. Navanitai, cha, and with butter. Shikshipu, they threw on one another. Translation purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. In gladness, the coward men enjoyed the great festival by splashing one another's bodies with a mixture of curd, condensed milk, butter, and water. They threw butter on one another and smeared it on one another's bodies. Purport. From this statement, we can understand that 5,000 years ago, not only was there enough milk, butter, and curd to eat, drink, and cook with, but when there was a festival, it would be thrown about without restriction. There was no limit to how extensively milk, butter, curd, and other such products were used in human society. Everyone had ample stock of milk, and by using it in many varied milk preparations, people would keep good health in natural ways and thus enjoy life in Krishna consciousness. Gopa Parashparam Rishta Dadi Shira Gritambuvi Asinchanto Vilimpanto Navini Taishtachikshipu. In gladness, the coward men enjoyed the great festival by splashing one another's bodies with a mixture of curd, condensed milk, butter, and water. They threw butter on one another and smeared it on one another's bodies. Namo Vishnu Vidaya Krishna Prasadavudaya Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Tanamane Namaste Sarasvatam Deve Gauravani Vajarne Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paskatya Desitarne. This is the definition of opulence in the Vedic culture. Opulence in the Western world means more or less steel and concrete, plastic, artificial food. And people think that this is advancement. They think, although they're eating food which is in the mode of ignorance, according to Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita says, food in the mode of ignorance is that which is tasteless, decomposed, stale, putrid, consisting of remnants and untouchable things. Yati yamam gata rasam puti purushitam chaya uchista api chamedyam bhojanam tamasa priyam. So this is liked by people in the mode of ignorance, that they don't mind eating food which is in a can that was cooked, maybe industrially cooked, maybe 5 years ago, packed into a can with all kinds of chemicals and preservatives. But they're happy because they think we're saving so much time. We simply, somehow or another, open the can, put it onto a pot, light the stove, and wait a few minutes and hope it doesn't burn, and then eat it. What it tastes like, it doesn't really matter. You didn't have to do anything to eat, you know. You didn't have to do anything. Or, if they are concerned about the taste, because they have no comparison, therefore they think it tastes all right. Or they call it accustomed to it. For instance, on airplanes is a typical place where you can see people's eating habits in general. And although the food is more or less like, it doesn't have very much of a taste, it's been cooked usually to the point where it has no taste whatsoever. And it's created from all kinds of ingredients which are also tasteless, which are stale and decomposed And people eat it, not only once, but you can see on the airplane, every time they serve a meal, probably every time I've sat next to someone, they eat the whole thing. Or at least they eat every meal. If it's an 8-hour flight and they serve three or four meals, the person will eat every meal. At least part of it. Because they're never satisfied. There's no satisfaction at all in what they're eating. That's called rasa gata. Gata means it's tasteless. But here we find that in the Vedic culture, people were concerned about the food, because food is real opulence. You may be a multi-millionaire, but if you can't eat properly, then how can you be happy? What is the good of your millions of dollars? That to be able to eat a chapati is worth millions of dollars if you can't even eat a chapati. Therefore, in the Vedic culture, people were concerned how they ate. Even 50 years ago in society, people used to cook for themselves. They used to call it mother's cooking. Is that what they call it here too? Mother's cooking? In other words, the mothers used to know how to cook. And that was an important part of her responsibility. Nowadays, in most parts of the world, the mothers don't know how to cook. No one has forgotten how to eat. Unfortunately, people have forgotten how to cook. So it's not a very healthy situation. And what they do is they just accept blindly whatever's available in the store. And the people who make things in the store or produce things in the store, they don't do things or produce them out of love, because they have no idea who they're dealing with. Or they have some idea who they're dealing with, and all they're trying to do is cater to their material desires. Whatever will sell, that's what they want to produce. And what will sell is not necessarily that which is healthy, or it doesn't even matter so much what you put into the box or into the can, it's what the box looks like. That's what people buy. If you have the right colored box, it has the proper picture on it, and people will buy it, no matter what's inside the box. As long as it looks good, then people think it must be good. And even when they try to read the box, who can understand what's on the box? There are so many chemicals listed, you couldn't even understand what they are. And besides that, people have been taught, the more chemicals, it must be more scientific. Therefore, at least the Krishna consciousness movement should recognize the importance of eating. This movement has been called the kitchen religion. Or sometimes they say in the Western world, the most direct way to get to a man's heart is through his stomach. Because this is also our philosophy. Atakshi Krishna Namadi, Na Braved, Grayam Indriyai, Sevam Mukhehi Jivado, Swayam Evas Bratyada. That no one can realize Krishna if he has blunt senses. If the senses are not purified, it's not possible to become Krishna conscious. But one could become Krishna conscious if he engages in devotional service, and devotional service begins with the tongue. The tongue is the principal organ of the body to lord it over the material nature, as I've explained before, that in the material world, we're here because we want to do two things. Enjoy the material world and lord it over material nature. And the principal way, the easiest way for most of us to do it, especially in modern society, is to eat. And because people are in the modes of ignorance, their method of controlling the material nature And enjoying it is perverted. It's very much perverted. And science has made it even more, so-called advancement of science has even made it more perverted. People get some satisfaction that they're lording it over the animals, they're controlling material nature. Principally, you get that satisfaction through eating. Because if no one else likes me, if no one else appreciates me, if no one else listens to me, whatever's on my plate is under my control. I may not be able to control anything else, but the cauliflower, the potato, they're in my control. And they're going to surrender to me. They're going to empower me so I can further control the material nature. They're going to give me the energy. They're going to give me everything, the ability, the shakti. They're going to enter into me and become one of my become my energies by which I can enjoy and control material nature even more. And according to what we eat, we develop a certain mentality. Nothing comes closer to our physical body than what we're eating. And if we're eating the mode of goodness, then naturally our consciousness develops somewhat in the mode of goodness. And the mode of goodness has certain symptoms, and the Bhagavad Gita says, does anyone know the first symptom of the mode of goodness of eating? Ayur Sattva Bala Roga Sukha Priti Vivardana Rasa Snigda Stiraridya Ahara Satvika Priya. Ayu means duration of life. Increases duration of life. Ayu Sattva. Sattva means goodness, or increases duration of life. It is satisfying. Ayu Sattva Bala Roga. Bala gives strength and frees one from disease, aroga. Sukha means happiness. Priti, satisfaction. Sukha priti vivardana. It's increasing these things. That's what the java food and the mode of goodness is. And rasa, it's juicy. Snigda, it's fatty. Stira, it's enduring. Ridya, and nourishing. Such food is liked by people in the mode of goodness. And here, milk is being glorified. Prabhupada used to emphasize that the reason why we want to protect cows, krishi gorakshavani jam, is that milk, the cows give milk. And milk is the most important foodstuff, because by milk, both the physical body and the brain are nourished. And just the nature of milk is that it produces a kind of contentment within the person who takes it. Because it's given, it's the only food that's voluntarily given out of love to the person who's taking it. And therefore, it creates a kind of motherly consciousness in the person who drinks it. For that reason, milk is glorified. Unfortunately, nowadays in the Western world, milk has been more or less produced industrially by cows, which are not so contented. They're being fed all kinds of things, and because they're being kept artificially, therefore they have to be given antibiotics to protect them from so many different diseases. Then they're milked artificially, and their calves are taken away from them, so they're always in anxiety. They always know that this farmer doesn't love me, that eventually he'll send me to the slaughterhouse, so they're always in anxiety. Then the milk is taken, it's homogenized, it's pasteurized, then it's put into a container and kept cold, and people drink it cold. So many different things. They don't know how to prepare milk, and it's in so many different ways, it's been polluted. They put in fish cod liver oil into the milk, at least in America, for vitamin D. In so many different ways, the milk, which is so essential, has been contaminated, And therefore, they have what's called lactose intolerance. People have developed allergies towards milk or an inability to digest milk products. And therefore, they claim in the Western world that milk is poisonous. The health books, so-called health books, they declare that if you drink milk, that it's abnormal, it'll produce all kinds of diseases, that only milk is only meant for calves or for little children. In so many ways, they've minimized the value of milk because they have no, because they're divorced from a natural culture in which milk is produced naturally and drunk at the proper time. But we find in the scriptures, for instance, Shukadeva Goswami and other sages, they simply, in the morning, they go to a householder, and after the householder milked his cow, he'd gladly give a pound of milk to the sage. And the sage would just drink a pound of milk and be satisfied for the day. But this is not the milk that you get in a carton, which was put through a chemical process, an industrial process. All the fat was taken out of it so they can make cream separately and make more money. It wasn't milk created for some profit. It was milk which was given by a happy cow and by a generous farmer in order to satisfy the sage. In this way, so many milk products were produced, and the people in the villages, they knew how to prepare the milk and make so many different types of preparations. At the Govardhan Puj, we find that they had rubbery, sweet rice, condensed sheer, condensed milk, gulabjamuns, and burfi, and laddus. They had so many different types of milk preparations. And people were very happy and satisfied offering these to Krishna and taking the remnants. And Krishna is also known as, this little baby Krishna is known as Ladu Gopal. Krishna also liked milk. He used to go and steal the milk or the yogurt and the butter from the houses of the gopis and feed it to the monkeys. This way the culture was based upon, rooted in the natural living, grains and milk products. And here it says that in many ways they were very healthy by this way. And nowadays, people don't want to drink milk. They want to eat only meat. So what is meat? What is the flavor for meat? The only flavor in the meat is mostly it's the blood. They think blood, they have no intolerance for blood. They're very tolerant eating blood. But for milk, which is the transformation of the blood, in order to which is due to the happiness of the cow produces milk, a contented cow. But that they have no taste for. Therefore we can understand that if one becomes lusty after taking someone's blood, after eating blood and flesh, they won't be very much interested in drinking milk. Those who are in the modes of ignorance and passion, they're not very much attracted to the mode of goodness. But it's in the mode of goodness that real knowledge develops. Tatra sattvam nimaladvat prakashakam anamayam sukhasangena banandi jnana sangena chagnaga. The mode of goodness is produced of those, what's the translations? Tatra sattvam nimaladvat. The mode of goodness being the purer than the others gives one knowledge. Those who are situated in that mode become attracted to the happiness and the awareness of the knowledge that it produces. In the mode of goodness, real knowledge and happiness develop. But in the mode of ignorance, tamatvagana jamvidi mohanam sarvadehina pramadalasya nidradis tannivanati bharata. The mode of ignorance is produced of delusion and madness and indolence and sleep, which bind the conditioned soul. If we want to become ignorant and develop all these qualities, then we can eat in the mode of ignorance. And in the mode of passion, it says, Raja Ratnika Vidi Trishna Sangas Mudbhava Tani Vaniti Bharata Karma Sangena Dehinam. The mode of passion is born of unlimited material desires and longings, and on account of this mode, one is bound to material fruit of activities. So if we want to develop qualities in the modes of ignorance and passion, we can eat in the modes of ignorance and passion. And if we want to develop qualities in the modes of goodness, if we want to develop real knowledge, real contentment and satisfaction, then we can eat in the modes of goodness. And of all the different foods that one can eat that will produce these qualities, the quickest is milk, all these milk products. Therefore, in the Veda culture, milk was cows were considered very important because they'd help one come to the platform of self-realization. By milk, we can take the milk and produce many different preparations, and the butter was used in sacrifices to satisfy the demigods and Krishna. And when the demigods and the Krishna are satisfied, then it says, Anad bhavati bhutani parjana anasambhava Jagna Bhavati Parajanyo, Jagna Karma, Samud Bhavan. That all living entities subsist on food grains which are produced of rain, and rain comes from the performance of sacrifice. And sacrifice is born of man's work. So every person is supposed to do some work, and that work culminates in Vedic sacrifice. For instance, those in the Veda culture, they work their land, and they produce some result, the Vaishyas. They produce some grains or vegetables or milk products, and one quarter of that produce was supposed to be given to the king. Even you find that Kamsa, who was not very nice, but when he asked Nanda Maharaj to bring milk products for the sacrifice, the Dhanarjaga, then immediately he called all the cowherd men, all the cowherd boys, and they all got together and they gathered the milk products, the yogurt and the butter, and they put them on bullocks carts. There was no fast trains at that time. And they just brought them all to Mathura to offer to the king. One quarter, whatever one produced, that would be given as tax to the king. But the king, he'd utilize it for things like Dhanarjaga, the sacrifice of some kind of sacrifice. Therefore, no one minded giving taxes to the king, because they knew that they'd be used for sacrifice, and by the sacrifice then the demigods would be satisfied, Krishna would be satisfied, and there would be rain. And because there was rain, they'd be able to grow their produce. They saw that there was a connection between what they were giving as taxes and their ability to get back produce. They get back three quarters of it, and only one quarter had to be utilized for tax. At that time, no one tried to hide their income tax, their income, because they saw that it was beneficial for them. They could see how everything was interrelated, and that it was in their own interest to give tax to the king, so the king could perform sacrifice, and therefore they would get abundant rain at the proper time, the seasons would be regulated, and because of that, everything would go on very nicely. And because there were no industrial enterprises, people weren't hankering after buying cars and all kinds of other modern so-called amenities. They were very satisfied with getting nice food, because the sacrifice, the climate was very nice. It wasn't too hot or too cold. And the seasons would come in their regulated times. People were healthy, they were happy, they were peaceful, they were well fed. In so many different ways they were benefited. But modern industrial enterprise, creating artificial necessities for people, divorcing them from even their own body, consciousness of their own body, drugging people in so many ways, so that they're not even aware of where their body's at, what to speak of their mind, Therefore, people in so many different ways, they're being misled. As a matter of fact, in the next verse, they'll talk about that. How people are just misled by modern culture, so-called culture, which is not really culture. And if we talk about the cow, immediately they'll say, well, these people worship the sacred cow in India. People are starving, but they worship the cow. And indeed, sometimes it's a little strange. If you go to Delhi or some cities, maybe Calcutta, you see all the cows wandering around on the street. It's not that anyone takes care of them. They're eating the garbage or the newspaper, but they think that this is cow protection. They don't want to take care of it, but the cows, but they don't want to kill the cows either, so they just wander around looking for a newspaper to eat. But this is not what it means. Cow protection means that one should take care of the cow. Therefore, people in so many different ways are being misled. As a matter of fact, in the next verse, they'll talk about that. How people are just misled by modern culture, so-called culture, which is not really culture. And if we talk about the cow, immediately they'll say, well, these people worship the sacred cow in India. People are starving, but they worship the cow. And indeed, sometimes it's a little strange. If you go to Delhi or some cities, maybe Calcutta, you see all the cows wandering around on the street. It's not that anyone takes care of them. They're eating the garbage or the newspaper, but they think that this is cow protection. They don't want to take care of it, but the cows, but they don't want to kill the cows either, so they just wander around looking for a newspaper to eat. But this is not what it means. Cow protection means that one should take care of the cow so it can produce milk. And that milk should be used, part of it, to make butter for sacrifice, part of it to feed the children, probably especially the children, old men, people who are weak. People should take the milk product and this way develop finer brain tissues so that they lead to clear thinking. At the same time, the bull, because generally there are an equal number of bulls, the bull shouldn't be, you know, put into a showcase that we're protecting the animals. Sometimes even our society, we don't utilize the bull, and yet we claim to be protecting it. The bull is meant for working. And if someone has some talent, then they like to use it. So the bull, because it has very strong, is actually happy to do some work. Otherwise, it's not very happy. The bull doesn't become happy just sitting around doing nothing, unemployed. But the bull is supposed to be tilling the ground, because if the bull doesn't till the ground, who's going to till the ground? And if you're going to produce bulls and you just feed them, it doesn't do anything, you'll just get envious of the bull. Think, you know, what are we doing with this bull? What is it doing? Then people will start thinking maybe it would be better to eat it. Engage it in our service somehow. Therefore, in the Vedic culture, people used to till the land with the bulls, and therefore they produced grains. So they were happy to have the bulls. It would produce so many different things. It could, as we know, that the bulls, if they're properly trained, they can transport things. And therefore they had bullock carts. They didn't need cars. They didn't have to buy a new car every year. There was no 1997 bullock cart. The bullock carts were safe. You know, there was no mass accidents on the bullock road. Big bullock crash, you know. What's that? Bullock races. These things didn't go on. They would just, someone knew how to make a bullock cart, and you have a bullock cart, usually lasts for a few, you know, there's no new style. And the bull would pull it, he's happy to pull it, engaging in work, and you were happy. They could get the water, they could do so many different things, plow the land. And therefore, that's called self-sufficiency. If we want to see what self-sufficiency is, we just have to go to an Indian village, where they have bulls and cows and they work the land. And they have time, If you look around in India, everyone looks like they're doing practicing. Most of the people look like they're doing nothing. There's this propaganda that by coming to the simple life, people are barbaric. You know, they're not really getting all the modern amenities. So what are all these modern amenities meant for? They're meant to save time. Supposedly they're going to save you time, right? You don't have to cook. You don't have to... No, all you do is have to work in a factory 8 to 10 hours a day, getting the money, so everything, then you can go home and open a can of sardines. Or you can open a can of spaghetti, which was made, you know, for the soldiers in the last war. For the people who lost the war. Although it appears that people are saving time, but they're not saving any time. They're working hard. They're completely in anxiety. If you go to a village, you don't see people rushing back this way and other people rushing the other way. Everyone's just sitting around there doing nothing. Of course, they don't know that they're supposed to be chanting Hare Krishna. All that free time is meant for chanting Hare Krishna. Therefore, someone comes to the village and says, "You guys are working too hard. You should go to the city. We'll give you a good job. We'll give you some money. And you can work in our factory 8 hours. And then you'll be able to buy so many wonderful things. Plastic shoes. You'll be able to buy plastic clothes and a TV set and watch how everyone else is enjoying life." So people are attracted because they don't have the higher taste of chanting Hare Krishna, which is all meant for. The whole idea of simple living is to save time so the body's healthy and you can chant Hare Krishna. You don't have to be in anxiety. But because that is missing, people try to live there in India, naturally they live much more simply, but because they're lacking Krishna consciousness, therefore they don't understand the benefit of the free time. They're misusing it, they become bored and idle, and they become attracted to go to the city and work in a factory for so-called modern amenities. Therefore the conclusion is we can understand about Vedic culture, try to appreciate it, and even more than appreciate it, is try to see how we can apply it within our life. Not as there, otherwise it seems like some fairy tale, some impractical stories about primitive people who lived 5,000 years ago and how they somehow or another convinced them, because they were ignorant, they didn't know about the modern world, they were unfortunate, they were just somehow or another blindly foolishly happy, contented with milk and cows rather than with television sets and computers. They just didn't know about these things. They spent the time with the cows and with the land and chanting Hare Krishna, and modern man sits behind a desk watching his computer all day long or his television set. And they think that this is advancement. Anyhow, there's so many things. So I'll stop there. Are there any questions? Yes.
You spoke about the mentality of the man. When Kami, can you speak about the mentality of the devotee when
he is?
Can you speak about the mentality of the devotee when he is?
When he is? Well, he sees that this is prasadam. So immediately he remembers Krishna. Prabhupada writes about the mentality in the verse Rasoham Asnukantiya Pravasi Shasti Suryo Pranava Sarva Vedeshu Shabdike Parusham Rishu. That I am the taste in water, the light in the sun and the moon, the syllable om in the Vedic mantras, the sound in ether, and ability in man. And Srila Prabhupada writes in the purport that the impersonalist perceives the presence of the Lord in water by taste, and the personalist also glorifies the Lord for his kindly supplying tasty water to quench man's thirst. The devotee, when he takes water, he immediately sees Krishna. That Krishna has very kindly supplied this water to quench my thirst, this tasty water. So similarly, the devotees, they see that this body is hungry. It has the impulse of being hungry. So Krishna is so kind that he supplied us this nice prasadam. So one immediately remembers Krishna. And because it's prasadam, he understands that the taste of this prasadam is one of the energies of Krishna. Therefore, it's non-different from Krishna. The whole thing is summarized in the verse, Sharira Vidrajal Jyotendriya Tayaka. This material body is a lump of ignorance, and the senses are all networks on the path to death. Somehow or another, we fall into this ocean of material existence. But the Supreme Lord is so kind, he supplied this prasadam to help conquer the tongue, which is most voracious. So now let's take this prasadam to a full satisfaction and glorify their lordship, Sri Sri Radha and Krishna, Gauranitai. And this way the devotee appreciates how Krishna is so kind. And he takes prasadam not with a mood that now I'm going to enjoy, now I'm controlling the material nature in this way. He takes it as a means of serving Krishna, that the body can be healthy and strong and be utilized for Krishna's service. And he perceives Krishna, or he increases his Krishna consciousness, because he sees this as Krishna's mercy. Yes.
If the milk in the West is so contaminated with wrong chemicals, is it better not to use it?
Well, in this age, if you were concerned about that, what would you eat? Better to, what's left to eat? What are you going to eat? What's not contaminated? You can also find organic milk.
Biological milk here?
Yeah, so here you can.
Where we get the milk, this farmer, he feeds the cows biological food, and they are all quite from Jersey cows.
But at the end, they go to the slaughterhouse. But at the end, they go to the slaughterhouse.
Well, he was suggesting to give the cows to us.
You need to sell them to us.
Huh?
You'd sell them to us?
Or you want to give them?
No. You need to take care of.
Yeah.
We don't even take care of. We don't even have our own cows to take care of. Yeah. Well, the point is that, anyway, I would rather get into that side of the argument. But if we actually learn, if we protected cows, then we could preach a lot more effectively on that issue. But since we don't do it ourselves to the actual extent that we should be doing it, or that we're expected to one day come up to that point, it's very hard to preach on that issue. But since the question was about, you know, the organic milk, in this age everything is contaminated, so sometimes we can get proper milk, sometimes we can get proper food, and sometimes we can't. But if we grew it ourselves, if we had our own cows, then would be much more likely. Unfortunately, we generally put our emphasis on so many other things except for that. We don't think it's very important. Although when it comes time for prasadam, everyone is expecting the best. Everyone's hoping that everything's going to be great, although we don't want to do anything to make sure that it's great, or hardly do anything. We want the tastiest food. Therefore, mostly, for instance, in our society, sometimes the cooks, they just have to cover everything over with sugar and butter. Just put in a lot of sugar so people don't notice what it tastes like, or spices, whatever. Because we're not very... It's a symptom that... I mean, not to be too critical, but we're just not that intelligent. We just don't know where to put our emphasis. No one wants to get their hands dirty, you know, touching the soil or doing that type of work. They think it's kind of low class. But, you know, riding around in a car and selling Korean artwork, that's first class. That's high grade work. And growing flowers and food and taking care of cows, that's, you know, that's low class. Because we're misdirected by modern propaganda. We're a victim also of this misdirection, bad education. And therefore it's hard for us to accept what reality is. Yes.
one thing that frustrated me with cows when you have in Vedic society, when Krishna was standing in the cows, there were many, many, many cows. And there are also many old cows. And these cows, they didn't give any milk anymore. But still, they were going out because there was grass everywhere, there was pastures and space. But nowadays, when there are like 40 old cows, you have 40 cows, they give milk for some time, and then they stop giving milk, and then you have 40 cows. Like, also in America society, Krishna society is there.
Yeah.
And there are cows that no longer give milk, but still they have to take care.
Well, and
that's such a burden. So is it possible in Kali Yuga to...
No, well, if you have people, if you have the proper planning, it is. What happened in America or even in places like France is they thought they were going to make money from the cows. I remember one time I went to Gita Nagri. It was like, this is in the early 70s when they first got Gita Nagri. Not early 70s, but later 70s. And I could see it wasn't going to work because the people living there, they all had cars. They all wanted to go to India once or twice a year. They had their videos. And where was the money going to come from? From the cows. The cows were going to make a lot of money. So they set up a commercial dairy. And all the money was supposed to come from the cows, who were supposed to provide the money so you can have a car and the petrol and the video and your own, you know, everything else, all the modern amenities. And the milk was supposed to do it. But the price of milk, the cows can't produce that much milk. It's not possible. And therefore, they had to produce more and more cows, get more and more milk. Exponentially, it was increasing just to keep up with their expenditures. And then finally, the whole thing collapsed. They couldn't do it. And then they blamed it on the cow. Because the cows can only give milk for so long, they can give only so much milk, and the money will, you only get so much money. But if you produce cows, the right amount of cows, according to the amount of land you have, without having commercially trying to, you know, make money from them, then you can, there's no problem. Because even though you get some cows, eventually they grow old, but they also die. It's not that they hang around forever and just keep on increasing. But that's the problem. If you examine it, that was the problem. The problem is we were trying to exploit the cow rather than protect it.
So there needs to be a balance, some of the old cows, some
of
the young cows.
Yeah, of course. It's automatically there if you plan properly. There's no problem. If you utilize the bulls and you plan properly, and you don't get, if you use the milk yourself, then you don't have to produce that, you don't need that many cows. And if you're trying to buy television sets, and stereos and cars with it, you're going to need a lot of cows. Then you'll have a problem. Anything else? Thank you very much. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gaur Premanande.